This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Terry Savage, the nationally syndicated financial columnist, joins us once again. Happy holidays, Terry.
Happy holidays. This is the season. What a great idea, the Salvation Army kettle.
No, I thought you were going to say this is the season for student loan forbearance to end.
can I burst the bubble for a lot of people, like 43 million people?
What's that?
Well, people have been hoping that somehow there'd be a miraculous wave of the wand and there'd be total forgiveness for some or all student loans. Well, we've gone through this whole budget proposal and everything, and there hasn't been one word about wiping out student loans.
Yeah.
By the way, some have. You know, if you were fraudulently, if you were defrauded by one of those schools like Corinthian Colleges, they've forgiven a bunch of those loans. People who never got really into the public service loan forgiveness program because their payments weren't counted, they're beginning to get forgiveness, even not just starting now, but going back because the program's over 10 years old, maybe more like 13 years old. So they're And disabled people have had student loans forgiven under certain circumstances. But the vast majority were waiting for a sort of a campaign. I won't call it a promise, but it happened from President Biden. We'll have to do something about forgiving these loans. We talked about that last
sure.
year.
Oh, my gosh. We talked about it a lot
but
this year.
But that's not been in the deal. What we did have was, since the beginning of the pandemic, we've had loan forbearance in the sense that you didn't have to pay, and your loans did not accrue interest. But that is all coming to an end faster than you can say on Donder on Blitzen, because January 31st, just when you're getting those bills coming in from your Christmas shopping, you're going to be required to start repaying your student loans again. I have some tips we can do maybe after the break.
I've got a break here now, so let's come back with a few tips like that. And maybe you've just got a question about your taxes or your investments or which way the markets are going these days. That's why Terry is here. 312-981-7200. Student loan forbearance ends at the end of next month. You got to start paying again. Terry, what are some of your tips and wisdom for people?
All right. Well, first of all, you wanted to forget about those student loans, and it was easy to do it because it's been almost 2 years now that you haven't been paying, and you probably even moved. You need to make sure your student loan servicer knows exactly where you are and that you remember who your servicer is, which is not an easy task, I admit. So let me tell you to go to studentaid.gov. You can log into your account. You have an account, you know that, with your ID and password, and find out all your outstanding federal student loans. Now, we're talking about federal student loans. We could talk about private later. For each loan, you'll see the phone number for your loan servicer, so you can contact them and update your contact information and work out a plan to resume payments. Now, that might just be as simple as starting up your automatic payment, monthly payment out of your checking account, something that you disrupted during the pandemic, or in any other way, resuming those suspended payments. But you should confirm what the amount is that's due with your lender. Make sure they have your contact information. A lot of people lost income and haven't recouped it. This might be the perfect time for you to apply for an income-based repayment plan. So if your income has dropped or you lost your job, you could get lower monthly payments over the long run. Of course, you'll pay more in interest, but that's better than a default. And right now, here's another little tip. Until the resumption, which is February 1st, any payments you make go directly to principal on your loan. So if you have some money now or in January, make another extra payment because it reduces the principal on which the interest is calculated. And I say that every little bit helps. The one thing you must not do is procrastinate. I'm telling you early, relatively early. Everybody else is going to start thinking about this after the holidays, about January 14th or 15th, when there'll be millions of news stories headlining, got to start repaying. They're all going to run in, contact their servicers. They're going to be overwhelmed. The time to do this is right now, when nobody's thinking about it. So again, contact your loan servicer. Make sure you know what your payment is. Make sure you know how you're going to pay it. See if you can set up a plan to maybe reduce it if your income has been reduced. That's all, by the way, in a column at terrysavage.com, including the link to studentaid, one word, .gov.
The headline of that is student loan forbearance ending. We talk so much about the administration's plans, and certainly when some of these people were running for office, the presidential candidates, and Joe Biden himself said, we really need to look seriously at eliminating student debt, and that just is not happened. And I guess, Terry, you think the window's closed on that completely, huh?
I think they've had so much on their minds with Build Back Better and with the debt ceiling and with the continuing budget resolution. I don't want to tell you not to. I mean, I really want you to deal with the situation as it exists.
Yeah.
But it's something in me suspects. Right now, this is not a sidebar. I got a release, or maybe it was on CNBC. I read it. The Grammys in Congress have gotten together to try to continue the advanced payment of child tax credits. So as the pressure builds from different interest groups, now that these major things have been put behind us for a few months, I think you will see attention turn not only to child tax credits and continuing them, but to maybe something to be done by student loans. But that's not the way to plan. That's a way to dream and hope. But a plan requires you to move into action on the reality, which is you're going to start to owe money again February 1st.
Lots of questions on the text line and on the phone lines. You can probably answer this one quickly. Is the IRS still behind with 2020 tax returns, or do I have a problem?
No, you don't have a problem, but you can go to irs.gov and see where's my refund. Where's my stimulus payment is kind of a moot point. If you didn't get it, then you can do it when you file your tax return. And only, believe it or not, you can start filing in, I would guess, about 2 months, 8 weeks, 9 weeks from today. You could file this year's tax return. You could claim it as a credit. But if you haven't gotten your refund, you're not alone. My contact said, I'm going on vacation. I said, is anything going to change in the next 2 weeks while you're away? I mean, are you going to suddenly say we caught up? He said, not a chance. So they're behind. I'll say it again. You get 3% interest on that refund going back to mid-April. Now it's starting to add up. I know you needed it, but it's more than you would have gotten with money in the bank.
I have a question about that. On the IRS form, then, there'll be something that says, did you get your stimulus check? And if not, then check this box and write in $1,400 or something like that?
It won't say it, but there will be certainly a line on which to claim a stimulus tax credit if you didn't get one. And you remember there was a $400 one, and then let me just think. Was that the $1,200 one, I think,
and then,
that came in January?
Yeah.
So you would get both of those if you didn't get them.
And
we're going to be back to, I'll have to relearn that all again, because we're going to be back to those same questions in about 8 weeks.
Dan, you've got a question on WGN for Terry Savage. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Terry. I have a question about the impact of the SECURE Act on inherited IRA RMDs. I think I'm getting some questionable advice from the original advisor that we need to disperse that entirely within 10 years. And
if see you're non-spousal, if you're only, not spouses, but non-spousal beneficiaries, yes.
I think I'm seeing conflicting information about if the person died prior to 12/31/19, that is not the case.
I'm going to look right. You know, I just got a really interesting report on that from Ed Slott, who is the IRA guru. I'm trying to find his year-end tax planning tips. Why don't you, this is so tricky. Will you please post at terrysavage.com on my blog, post your question. In general, non-spousal beneficiaries now have to disperse that amount within 10 years. I'm not sure about the date of death provision you raise, but I will definitely get the specifics and put it up on the blog if you'll post the question there.
And I'll even take your phone number off the air, and maybe we can reconnect on this next week. Thank you for the call. Here's just another one about that. What does RMD stand for again, Terry?
Required minimum distribution, which start for people now, used to start at 70 and a half, now start at age 72, the year in which you become age 72.
Required minimum distribution from your IRA.
The government said, great, we let you save all that money tax deferred, assuming it's not a Roth. We let you save all that money tax deferred, and now we want our taxes. You can't just hang on to that and leave it to your kids. You have to start taking it out over what we sort of presume will be your life expectancy based on the balance at the end of last year. Now, you may remember that 2020, we're in 2021. In 2020, there was no RMD because it was in the midst of the pandemic,
right?
And the market fell, and they just put that off. But for 2021, you must take that RMD in the next 2 weeks. So otherwise, there's severe penalties. I would just, nobody's asked this, but you know, so you have one IRA that you rolled over at Fidelity, and one IRA that you rolled to Vanguard, and one IRA at Schwab. And you have different amounts in each. You can give any one of those IRA custodians the total amount. You know, just say, well, what would you calculate for my distribution for me? And then you can take it out of one or several of those IRAs as long as you take the amount based on all your IRAs. If you still have a 401k, you're going to have to take that distribution separately out of your the one that applies to the 401k separately out of the 401k. But IRAs, you can kind of commingle the total value of the assets and take the RMD out of one or a couple of them.
Are they going to change the age for RMD?
Well, they just changed it.
Yeah, so
I goofed on that in my column a week or two ago, and I went, oh my goodness, how did I write that? It is 72 now if you're just being required now to take RMDs.
I have a student loan question. My 18-year-old son is a freshman in college, has a trust fund, but took out a student loan because there was no payments, no interest. Since this will not be extended, he plans on paying it off. Should he pay it off right away, or should he make a few payments to better his credit? I'm just wondering.
Student loans, federal student loans, don't impact your credit. I'm astounded. You mean someone took out this year a student loan intending to pay it back immediately just because it was free money?
Because there was no payments and no interest, so he thought, yeah, it's free money. I'll go grab some of that.
That's a pretty sophisticated technique. I'd suggest you get that written off pretty quickly.
Terry Savage on Wednesdays, terrysavage.com, for her financial columns and advice, including one most recently on student loan forgiveness. Terry, let's not spend a lot of time on this, but I just want to read you one text, which is representative
John,
of many of them. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because that was such a nice long commercial break, which means people are paying us to be on the air. That's great. That I had a chance to do that research for Dan, and just because other people might have been interested. He asked about the SECURE Act, which said, no, if you're a non-spousal IRA beneficiary, you can't stretch it out over your lifetime. You can only stretch it out over 10 years. He asked which non-spousal beneficiaries that applies to when the owner dies. And Ed Slott, the great IRA guru, there is information. It says that this applies to the non-spouse beneficiary of an IRA owner who died after 2019. So if you died in 2020 or afterwards, then you are subject to this 10-year rule. And a little bit more interesting information, which I hadn't thought about. What's the 10-year period? Is it the 10-year from the end of the year in which the person died? Not in this case. The ending date of the 10-year period is the 10th anniversary of the person's death, or if the beneficiary is a child, the child's attainment of majority. Ask your tax consultant. But the year is anybody who died before the end of 2019 can still stretch it out for the lifetime. If you died in 2020, you're subject to getting it all out of there at some point within 10 years. Go back to your text. I'm sorry, John, but
why is it everyone's assertion that student loans don't need to be paid back or outright forgiven? What's the next? What's next? Car loan forgiveness? Mortgages? No consequences for anyone. Whatever the reason is that the government has instituted some of these means to not pay back your student loans, a lot of people don't like that.
Well, John, you remember last summer, and I wrote a couple of columns over the last year or two saying, yeah, that wouldn't be fair to the people who paid off their loans. So I thought a better idea. Don't forget that some people out there, I know at least 42 people sitting out there of the 42 million that have student loans, are nodding their heads. They have loans that still carry interest rates of 7 and 8%. So I suggested that they change the interest rate on student loans and make it just like the interest rate the government pays when it borrows for 10 years, which is currently about 1.5%. If they change that every 6 months, people would be able to get out from under the huge burden of compounding interest on these balances. So nobody here has advocated just wiping them out. I'm just saying that there were mentions of it during the campaign. It doesn't look like that's happening.
And just one other note, speaking of the interest that accrues, This is a statistic I saw in, I think it was the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and I've been mentioning it a lot because it astounds me. The number of people with $200,000 or more in student debt, 1 million. Over 1 million people have $200,000 or more in student
loans. Those are your best doctors. Those are the ones that not only went to med school, but specialized in something that's going to save your life one day. Now, they could potentially apply for public service loan forgiveness. But, yeah, there are a lot of people. There are some people who just went to college and kept going to college so that they wouldn't suddenly have to start repayment as long as they were in school. But I think a lot of them are people who went on to higher education, specialized higher education. So,
I guess
and
so.
Some of it
I mean,
is the accrued interest.
Well, I hope they're not philosophers. Yeah, maybe they're dentists and doctors, but it just seems to me like there's something wrong with that number, that 1 million people have $200,000 in the back of their mind. Is to me, I don't care how much money you're making, that would be crippling for me.
Of course it's crippling. And that it's, I'm going to write a column on a new book by Lawrence Kotlikoff, who talks about why it might be better. It's a great new book called Money Magic. I'm still in the middle of reading it, and I'm going to write a column about it. But one of his first chapters is, maybe your child should be a plumber instead of a doctor.
Yeah, how about
and
that?
It deals with that.
Here's Fran. You're on WGN Radio. Fran, what's your question for Terry Savage?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I inherited an IRA last year when my mom passed. Do I have to take it out? I know it's 10 years. Do I have to take it every year, or can I wait till the 10th year?
No, you can wait till the 10th year. I'm glad I have that information just up in front of me. It's not like an RMD,
okay,
according to the IRS, where you have to take it every year. You can wait for the end of the 10th year.
Is that because she inherited
it? I've been told.
Is that because she inherited it, Terry?
Well, when did your mom pass away?
May of 2020.
Yeah, okay, so she falls under that 10-year rule, but the IRS says you don't have to take RMDs each year. Mm-hmm. You can, if you want, but just think about it. 10 years from now, let's say it's $20,000 or $30,000, and it's grown to maybe $35,000 or $40,000. That 1 year is going to bump your income up. It's ordinary income. It could cause you, at that point, to pay more for Medicare. And it could cause you to pay more for your Medicare Part B for 2 years, maybe. Depends. It's called an IRMA adjustment. So you want to think about it in perspective of what it might look like in 10 years if you take that all in 1 year.
Okay, because I have to take out, you know, almost $20,000. That hurts my income with the Obamacare, then I pay more.
Exactly. But in 10 years, maybe you're on Medicare, and maybe it isn't enough money to move you up into a higher Medicare Part B premium.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Good luck. You betcha. Thanks for the phone call, Fran. We're glad we could help. Let's let Mike ask his question. You're on WGN. Mike, how can we help you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Terry, I've been a self-employed subcontractor for the past 35 years, and I pay the quarterly estimated taxes. And I'm just wondering, is that money, will I be getting Social Security entitlement benefits? Am I paying in for that, or am I not? Is that not going towards that? That's basically what my question was.
Oh, well, who set up your quarterly estimates? And I'm sure the IRS has been looking at your total return. That estimated payment should include actually probably both sides of Social Security because you're self-employed. So you do pay the employer side and your own, not as much as an employer-employee relationship. And surely you've been paying into Social Security all these years. But whoever, and I'm sure the IRS would have caught it if you hadn't. But again, you should consult with your accountant and just make sure that's the way it's been designated.
Very good. Okay, that was my question. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks for the phone call. How about you, Maureen? You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Maureen. You're on the air. I'll come back to Maureen in a minute. Let's give Joe a turn. Joe, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Joe?
Hi, John.
Hey.
Barry, I have a question for you as far as I pay for a car that we bought, and I send extra money each month, and I thought they would be applying it to the principal, the balance over the amount that was due. And I don't think that's what they're actually doing. I think they're applying it to the interest.
You know,
does that make sense?
It does. You're smart to catch it. let's take a mortgage, for instance. You can clearly specify when you pay $200 a month extra on your mortgage that the extra amount is to go toward principal, and you should get a statement at the end of the year verifying that they've credited toward that. But car financing is a really strange thing. And if I were you, I would be saving the extra couple hundred dollars and coming up with one payment at the end of the year, or trying to pay off that car loan. Probably the rate is higher than the money you're making in the bank, the earning in the bank. And it's very hard to deal with car financing unless you're doing it through a bank. But through a dealership, you might very well be correct that they've applied it in a way that's least favorable to you. They want that principal outstanding so you could pay more interest.
But if you specify to them you want it on the principal, aren't they supposed to do it?
I don't know if they're all
And how do you do that? Do you write
that
in the notation? Where do you put that information?
I'm just trying to figure out. I'm just not so sure. People do round up their car payments. But if you want to make it specifically apply to your loan, you need to contact the lender and say, here's what I've been doing. I'm looking at a report by Experian that says, yes, you can pay more, because two-thirds of new car loans last 6 years or more. So definitely you might want to make an extra payment. But before you do that, you want to ask whether they will, in effect, the lender, apply it to the principal.
Well, I did call them and talk to them, and they said they told me they apply it to the principal so that I get paid faster.
Yeah, you pay down the loan quicker that way, yeah.
Yeah, well, if they've
What makes you think they're not doing that?
Because I saw the statement that they sent me showed all the extra money was being collected and put in a box all by itself on the statement, and it was not being applied directly to my principal like I had intended it to be.
Yeah, if you subtract it, the principal is not going down as fast.
Are you dealing with General Motors or a Ford financing, or are you dealing with the dealership's financing?
A dealership's financing.
What's your interest rate?
I honestly don't know at the top of my head.
Okay, your finance charge. I think that this might be the time where you want to pay off that loan somehow, because they're financing and dealerships, according to Experian, and I'm looking at it right here, many lenders don't apply your extra payment directly to the principal. Instead, they'll apply it first to the additional interest accrued since your last payment, and only then to the principal. It sounds like they're not applying anything to the principal here.
Also sounds to me. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, according to Experian, which is where I go for things like this, find out exactly what your lender is required to how to make your lender do this and apply it directly to your loan principal. You can specify in writing. You can mail extra principal payments, they suggest, even to a different address. I say that's really complicated. I say pay off that car loan now. If you have the money, save up and maybe either make a lump sum payment, which they can hardly ignore. So if your loan's going on for another 3.5 years, and if you can suddenly by the end of the year have an extra $1,200, $2,000, you would see that they would definitely apply it to the balance outstanding.
It sounds to me like you need to hear from them what they're doing with that box, and will it ultimately be deducted from the principal? That's your homework assignment, Joe, and I want you to get back to us because I think a lot of people can relate to that strategy. Tell us what they said, and we are out of time. Okay, Terry.
There we go. Good being with you. Talk to you next week.
That's Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Three new tenants are coming to Block 37 in Chicago. Lindbergh, Designers Market, and Candle Time will open stores at the downtown shopping center. The three stores will fill about 13,000 square feet, but their arrival is seen as good news for the downtown retail shopping district. According to Cranes, the retail vacancy rate for the Central Loop jumped to 26.1% this year, up from 14.7% in 2019. Block 37 has lost at least two tenants since early 2020. An East Coast company that provides co-working lab space is leasing 30,000 square feet in Lincoln Park. Biolabs is leasing the space in the Life Sciences Building at 2430 North Halsted. The company rents lab space by the month to companies that need space for scientific experiments and research. Crane says Biolabs is betting on Chicago's growth as a hub for biotech and pharmaceutical companies. The location will be the first in the Midwest for Biolabs, which has a business model similar to WeWork. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food on WGN, and that means Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about lamb.
Mary had a little lamb.
No, not Mary's lamb. The lamb that you cooked at home. In fact, when was the last time you cooked lamb at home? The answer before the pandemic for a lot of us was never or hardly ever. But when the pandemic hit, the lamb industry took a hit.
Everybody shut down and we lost all of our sales to high-end restaurants, cruise ships. In fact, that was about 30% of our lamb market went from there.
Pete Camino of the American Lamb Board says most of that restaurant and cruise ship lamb went to grocery stores. And a funny thing happened. Shoppers took a liking to it.
To give people more accessibility to lamb. And since we've done that, lamb sales have gone up 25%. Lamb burger across the United States has gone in some places up to as high as 40%.
And now the restaurants are serving lamb again. Pete Camino says there are even more lamb fans.
People were afraid to try lamb before. Well, here it was in the store for them until they tried it. So now when they go into a restaurant and says, there's lamb in front of us, boy, we'll try it again because it was good.
Social media has helped out too, as bloggers have done their thing to push lamb.
Our bloggers have really picked up. The bloggers are putting recipes and stuff out, making it more accessible for lamb. We've also gone to the barbecue side of it, tailgate parties this fall, smoke flavor, barbecues. People have really jumped on that. That has really exploded.
Some of us really love the distinctive gamey, earthy flavor of lamb, and some of us really don't. The reason it tastes different than beef is a particular type of fatty acid that lambs have that beef doesn't. And depending on the diet, the flavor can be mild or strong. Camino says the lamb industry is actually working with food scientists to develop different flavor profiles.
And hopefully that'll increase lamb sales that way, too.
At the Chicago Board of Trade, a big sell-off in wheat right now, down about 27 cents. That's 3.4% at $7.60 a bushel. Beans are up about 3 cents right now, $12.62, and corn is down 4 at $5.86. From the farm to your belly, we had National Chocolate-Covered Cupcake Day a while back. Today is, for all of the rest of them, it's National Cupcake Day. Enjoy. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We've got a couple of minutes to talk to Tim Nagel, the general manager of Five Iron Golf in River North. There's a new location. First of all, Tim, let's talk about the new location. Where are you guys located now?
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, we're actually in Block 37, so 108 North State Street, right there in Block 37 on the second floor there. So we're pretty excited about that.
There are Five Irons in Chicago. It started in Manhattan, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. What's the experience when I go to Five Iron Golf? What do I do?
There's multiple things you can do. Mainly, the most part about it is playing golf. You know, we have 11 simulators in our new location, all TrackMan simulators. Basically, you'll be able to go in there, practice with some digital cameras, some data from TrackMan, along with, you know, you'll be able to play about 100 golf courses.
You actually simulate the different actual golf courses, huh?
Yes, 100%. So we have as local courses from Cog Hill to Medina Country Club to some of the famous ones like Pebble Beach and some other ones throughout the country there for you.
How true are those technologies? Do they really simulate those courses and the stroke and the shot and all?
100%. They're probably 100% accurate there. It's all radar-based. So it's basically picking up the ball from contact into the screen and be able to calculate that and simulate it just like it would be in the real life on a driving range or on a golf course there for you.
What you guys do, though, is not just give people a chance to improve their game or play, but you've got full bar service, a menu, you've got food, ping pong tables, widescreen TVs to watch sports, I guess, or actually the simulated golf experience, right?
Yes, we're definitely in the community there for just a restaurant, a bar, an entertainment center, not only with golf. We're, you know, there that you want to come watch a football game. We're going to have Red Zone on. We're going to have a couple football games on for you. Just being out there and being able to have a good happy hour of crowd, just a great gathering place for teams, for corporate events, things like that.
You know, this sounds like the experience people would imagine around bowling alleys, but it makes perfect sense to me to make it a golf experience. People love golf and they love all of those other features.
They sure do. The golf community in Chicago is amazing. It's kind of grown so much. You know, like I said, we're only 3 years old here in River North, and just the amount of the community that's come out and supported us was able to expand there and the loop there at Block 37 and even in Lincoln Park coming up here shortly.
I'm going to run, Tim, but do you guys do gift cards?
We sure do, and we're doing a 25% gift card now, too. So if you go online, you'll be able to get 25% off any gift cards here at 5irongolf.com.
I think this would be an excellent gift for a lot of people, 5irongolf.com. Interesting business, Tim. We'll talk more about it when the weather gets a little warmer. Well, actually, we don't need to. This is perfect for when the weather's cold, isn't it?
It is. This is the perfect time of year to come indoors and hit some golf balls.
Oh, boy. Thanks, Tim. We'll visit later.
You have a good day now.
5irongolf.com.